Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware with Ryan Schramm. Episode 60 for February 27th, 2010. Big Bang Fusion. This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/twit. And by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcasts.com/twitch. It's time for Twitch this week in Computer Hardware with our good friend and computer hardware wizard from PC Perspective, Mr. Ryan Schratt. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Doing very, very well.
You guys aren't getting snow out there. I figure if it's snowing in Austin, Texas, and Dallas, and that kind of stuff.
Maybe if you look over my shoulder, you'll see.
Luckily, hit you guys.
It's 79 degrees in the studio. The sun is shining outside. It's basically it's Florida here.
It was 27 when I came into my office today.
Yikes!
So, and that's a warm up over the last couple of weeks. So, take what I can get, I guess.
So we have a number of stories to talk about today in the hardware
absolutely.
World, including Optimus technology that you were so excited about, and Apple, Big Bang Fusion, which is not the same as Big Bang Theory.
Nope.
A USB drive from Corsair that's very high performance, a new beta for Flash, a whole lot of stuff. And, of course, your Twitter questions and answers. We can get to that in just a second. Before we go too much farther, though, this is a good show to mention our friends at Citrix and their product, GoToAssist Express. GoToAssist Express is a remote access product. That's what Citrix does very well, but it's tuned for the IT and support professional, the person who needs to, you know, help people over the phone with their hardware and software issues. The problem with that, as anybody knows who does over the phone support, and I include myself, it's a pain in the butt. Did you see the video of the woman on the radio show?
Yes.
So that's what I do, you know, on the radio show. Now, and you get people like that who are just kind of clueless, and you try to help them. And basically what you really wish you could do is just reach out and get into the computer and just fix it. And that's what GoToAssist lets you do very easily. GoToAssist is simple for them. They don't have to have anything installed on your system. You just send them on their system. You send them a link. Or if you're in chat, you paste a link up there. Or you can even say, go to assist.com and click the, you know, start a session button. They do that. The software is very quick to install because it's very small. It's just a little Java stub. And suddenly, you have access to their system. They can watch as you fix things. You can drag files from your computer to theirs. So if you've got malware bytes or something you want to, or a system update you want to drag over, no problem. You can do up to 8 sessions at once, so there's no waiting. You can do them unattended if you like, which means you don't have to wait for the client to be there. It gives you a survey of what's on the computer, including operating system, security software, anything running in the background. I mean, I can go on and on. This stuff is great. If you have to do support, they have day passes too if you're just an occasional support pro. You know, you do it for family and friends. But they also have monthly subscriptions that allow unlimited sessions. Go to GoToAssist.com/twit and try it free for 30 days. GoToAssist.com/twit. Go to Assist Express. The great folks at Citrix.
I am glad you said reach through the computer and fix the problem as opposed to reach through the computer and smack somebody in the face.
You want to do
that. That's what I would more often like to do.
Enough. I'm going to fix it and I don't want to hear anymore. Works on Macs and PCs too, by the way. So story one is I got all excited. Big Bang Fusion, not Big Bang Theory.
No, not Big Bang Theory. We'll save that for the science shows.
Yes.
Maxwell's house and that kind of stuff. This is Big Bang Fusion. This is really, the Big Bang Fusion is a motherboard from MSI that is, it's P55 chipset based, which means it is built for Intel Linfield processors. So this is the LGA 1156 socket. This is the Core i5, Core i3, and some Core i7 processor socket. But the key of this motherboard is not really the processor or anything else with it. It is the fact that it is the first motherboard that uses the Lucid Hydra chip. The Hydra chip is designed to enable multi-GPU scaling that doesn't require NVIDIA or ATI specific technologies or licenses or anything like that. It's been in preview form, up and coming technology since like September of 07, I want to say almost. It's been kind of a long time coming for this technology. But the theory behind it, the kind of premise behind the technology is pretty simple. They basically want you to be able to run multiple graphics cards in your PC for better gaming performance. But they don't want you to have the fixed requirements of having to use identical graphics cards from NVIDIA or identical graphics cards from ATI. So you'd be able to use, say, a GeForce GTX 285 along with a GeForce GTX 260 or something like that. If you were upgrading graphics cards, for example, you'd be able to keep your old one and still see a performance improvement from keeping the older car as opposed to just kind of wasting it or throwing it away or something like that. They want to do that with both NVIDIA and ATI cards, and they had the goal of enabling cross-vendor GPU acceleration, which would enable a user to have an NVIDIA GTX 285 and a Radeon HD 5870 in the same system and see performance scaling from that as well. It's a very lofty goal. You know, nobody has ever tried to do anything like this before. The closest we've gotten is in ATI's case with the AMD, the Radeon line of cards. You could pair a 5870 with a 5850, for example. But what would happen was you'd basically get theoretical max of twice of the 5850, twice of the lower performing card, because the higher performance card would basically kind of downclock, downperform itself to the level where it matched the other existing graphics card in the system, and then you'd scale based on those results. So it's kind of been done before, but not really in the same target, not really in the same goal as what they're trying to do here. Now, the motherboard itself from MSI is actually a really high-quality motherboard. The Big Bang series is kind of their super high-end, ultra-enthusiast, ultra-gaming, lots of overclocking options. It's got, you know, 10 SATA connections, 12 or 14 USB 2.0 ports. It has it doesn't have USB 3.0 or SATA 6, which is kind of a letdown, but still has lots of other options for it. Lots of overclocking. We've talked about the OC Genie button on this show before, which is like a one-touch button that you press on the motherboard. Then you boot up the system, and it will automatically, at the hardware level, overclock your processor to a safe level without you having to do anything else, worry about voltages or clock speeds or anything, that kind of stuff. It's the most basic form of overclocking you can do, and it's actually fairly reliable. But as I was saying, you know, the key is this Hydra chip. And the Hydra technology is both a hardware and a software solution. The hardware sits on the motherboard. It is essentially a bridge chip that takes as input one PCI Express by 16 connection and outputs through multiple PCI Express connections. And on this motherboard,
Wouldn't you have slowdown, though? I mean, you can't have the full
like
throughput.
Latency through the chip?
Well, that and your bandwidth is divided now, right?
Yeah, I mean, because your source is only a by 16 lane, you know, you're splitting it up between three connections. So in this case, you have on this particular motherboard, you have 3x8s. So you are kind of bottlenecking the bandwidth.
Right.
But the real key here is the GPU to GPU bandwidth, not necessarily the final result going back to the processor.
I see.
So the Hydra 200 chip itself actually supports full speed bandwidth amongst all of the GPUs that are connected to it. And then the only type of bottleneck you might have is if all three of those GPUs wanted to talk to the CPU at the same time, which is not very isn't common.
Okay.
So there's not a real bottleneck in that regard. Now, as far as latency goes, you do kind of introduce an extra step in latency, but I don't think it's not enough. I mean, we're talking nanoseconds here, and we're talking about 60 frames per second. So we're not talking about, you know, the same level of latencies we really need to get worried about. So the hardware itself is kind of simple in that regard. It has a RISC processor on it, and it actually does help. It's like a hardware software combination in terms of how the technology actually works. The kind of key is really, though, the driver that is installed in the system. And it's just called the Hydra Engine driver. And it's a really lightweight piece of software. It installs just like any other driver in your computer. And it is responsible for essentially intercepting the calls for a PC game and deciding which GPU it needs to send that work to. Now, it's a little bit different than how SLI or Crossfire work, because those are, you know, the native NVIDIA ATI versions of multi-GPU scaling essentially do alternate frame rendering with a couple of modifications. They'll send one frame to one GPU and one frame to the other, and then that's how they just alternate those back and forth. They used, in the when SLI and Crossfire first came out years ago, or when it was reintroduced years ago, they also had something called split frame rendering, which is just like it sounds. Essentially, the GPU would split the monitor into two sections, and each GPU would render a certain section. And depending on the load on that GPU at any given time, the kind of the visual proportion of what you're seeing being rendered by each GPU would vary. So if there are really complicated things all going on in the top third of the screen, one card might do the top third, while the other card does the whole bottom two thirds. And that's kind of closer to what Hydra is attempting to do here. Only they're not breaking it up by the screen level, they're breaking it up by the object level. So they try to say, okay, well, the gun, if we're playing a first-person shooter, for example, the gun and the floor level and the top chandelier thing of whatever scene, that seems to balance out with the rest of the guys on the screen. We'll split that between the two GPUs. It's much more complex, yeah, I feel, method of doing it, but it offers a lot of flexibility because that's how they're able to load balance between cards of different performance levels, and why they would be able to balance between an ATI and NVIDIA card, because they don't have to facilitate communication between those two independent drivers, the NVIDIA driver and the ATI driver. They just send some work off to ATI's card, they send some work off to NVIDIA's card, and then the software and the hardware is responsible for melding those back into a single frame to output through one of the cards connected to a monitor. So that's kind of the theory behind it. And it's one of those technologies that we've been talking about for a year, you know, almost 2 years now, well, more than 2 years now. And it's always been really exciting. It's always kind of been on the cusp there, because one of the things that I think a lot of problems that PC gamers complain about are that, you know, you buy a new system and you upgrade it in 2 years, what are you doing with the old hardware? You know, you can't, if you upgrade to a different processor, you don't get to keep that CPU on your motherboard and somehow, you know, still utilize it. You can build a secondary system, which a lot of people might do. The same thing with a graphics card. If I bought a Radeon 5870 last month and I had a GeForce GTX 260 Plus, which was a good performing card that's just starting to show its age, it's still good for some performance. But, you know, if in the current system before Hydra came around, you just kind of throw that off to the side or build another computer on it. Mm-hmm. So the idea would be here that you keep all of your hardware and you keep its usefulness for a longer period of time and you get a better value out of it. The unfortunate kind of problem is that the results weren't as spectacular as we were hoping. I tested three different modes to the Hydra technology: N mode for NVIDIA mode, A mode for ATI, and then X mode for Crossvendor. And it's just like you think it, just like it sounds like it should be. N mode is if we took two different GPUs from NVIDIA and scaled them using Hydra's chip. How much scaling do you get from one card to the next? And in that regard, the results are pretty good. If we had, I think I tested a GTX 285 and a GTX 260 Plus. And so these are the current generation cards, but they're priced about $200 to $150 apart in terms of where you can buy them today. And so the performance is fairly different, as you would expect, for those two GPUs. And in most cases, what we saw was we combined these two cards in the system and you would get a nice scaling percentage up for the combined performance. Just as a quick example, in Batman Arkham Asylum, which is one of those top-end games right now, you know, the GTX, the high-end card, got 115 frames per second, and the low-end card got 87. The combined performance was 160. So that's actually a pretty good scaling amount of about 40% at 1920 by 1200 resolution. So that's actually a really good performance bump for keeping around a card. And actually, you're keeping a healthy percent. The kind of key here for the efficiency of this product is kind of how we're judging it, is how much of the lower card's performance do you get to keep in your system, right? That's kind of how we judge the value of it. If we went from 115 to 120, is it worth buying this motherboard specifically for this product? Is it worth worrying about Hydra technology if we're only getting a 2 or 3%
right
retainment of that performance?
Especially
of the
solar since it kind of sounds like a kludge, to be honest.
It does.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate part is at the end of the article, that's kind of what the result we come to, is that it's like a major driver revision away from being a really great product. You know, and unfortunately, I don't know how long that will take for them. They're a very small company. And if you look at the driver teams at NVIDIA or ATI, we're talking hundreds of people. And I don't think this entire company is hundreds of people. I don't think this entire company is even 100 people. And the software teams at NVIDIA and ATI that don't have to deal with as complex algorithms as this necessarily on an everyday basis, you know, they have a lot of teams dedicated just to this process. And they're a very small company that's attempting to do something truly revolutionary and could be very kind of game-changing in the world of PC gaming and how multi-GPU scaling works. Because, I mean, they're not trying to do this just for games. They want to do this for anything that uses a GPU for computing. So any high-performance computing applications out there for Fermi-based GPUs will be coming out soon. They want to be able to, well, if you have current generation GPUs from ATI or NVIDIA and you're running a rendering farm, why throw away that investment, or why try to sell it off when you could keep it and combine it with the performance of these other better, faster ones that are coming out in the future? So they have bigger goals than just gaming, but obviously for the audience that we are talking to, we're really worried about what is the mainstream consumer interested in Hydra technology for, and that's for gaming. So the NVIDIA results gave us the best results. ATI only cards had pretty good scaling, and the cross vendor combining an NVIDIA and an ATI card were more than a little bit disappointing. Unfortunately, there were some games that didn't work at all. There were some games that had some really bad visual tearing or glitches and that kind of stuff in them that took away from the experience, that we basically said this is a non-playable experience. Even if the performance was good, there were black squares flashing all over the screen, that's obviously not a good experience. So I would say that right now, this technology, this is the only motherboard that uses it, this MSI Big Bang Fusion, is still in the wait and see pattern. I'm getting driver updates from Lucid almost every other week. And so we've basically got a section of the office that has that system set up full time, just because every time a driver comes out, we want to test it immediately and see if we see any major improvements, see if we see any game compatibility or game performance improvements. And, you know, I'm less hopeful than I was, a year ago, because now that I actually have the product and I'm not seeing as quick a pace of improvement as I had hoped since we actually started playing with it in November. I guess it was more the December timeframe, but it's not worth the investment, because we're talking about an expensive motherboard here.
Right.
It's probably $350 motherboard. That's about as expensive as any motherboard you can buy today for the enthusiast, you know, PC gaming market. It has a lot of other great features, overclocking, you know, storage support, all that kind of stuff. But the real key of it, the real kind of differentiating point, is that Hydra. And I don't think it lives up to we've got a lot more benchmarks and evaluation on the motherboard itself versus the driver versus all kinds of different things. If they check out the website at pcper.com and they can see all of those details. But I know we talked about it several times on this show. We've talked about it for a long, long time. And this is kind of the first kind of culmination of all the information we currently have that we had been able to post. So.
And so this is Lucid's technology, that this Hydra thing?
The company is called Lucid Logics. They make the Hydra technology. They developed the custom chip and the driver that then they sold to MSI to put on a motherboard.
But so can only MSI use it?
Well, right now, MSI is the only one that is. But Lucid is offering this chipset up to, you know, ASUS and Gigabyte and those guys. Okay. So maybe, you know, it might be telling that ASUS, who is usually kind of one of the most forward-looking companies in this type of market, chose not to use the technology. Now, when we first heard that, we thought, well, maybe MSI just, you know, paid for the exclusive. They wanted the first batch. They wanted to have all that. But, you know, we haven't heard ASUS talk about this product coming out at all, or a product of theirs coming out using Lucid yet. And I'm thinking that the reason why is because they are seeing the same thing we are seeing, where it's good, it's decent, but it could be a lot better. And, you know, maybe they don't want to be one of the guinea pigs right now while MSI was willing to take that chance.
Yeah. Yeah, let them do it. Let MSI try it. They'll do anything. That's funny. Yeah, because ASUS usually does this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ASUS is usually a very forward-looking company. MSI is trying to go that route as well. I mean, hence why they would take the chance on this.
Right.
And make up, they basically built a new motherboard brand, a high-end motherboard brand based around these types of technologies. The other motherboard was the Trinergy, and it's like a three-way SLI NVIDIA chipset based thing. So I mean, they're trying as well. So, you know, you got to commend both sides, MSI and Lucid, for trying something new. But unfortunately, I can't tell everybody, you know, this is something awesome, you need to go buy it.
Right.
So
moving on, Apple, we keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with the MacBook Pro. We know any day now they've got to announce an Arendelle-based MacBook Pro. And you've been talking about this Optimus technology from NVIDIA. Yep. That would be a logical thing to put in there, too, since, as you mentioned, not right now, I have to reboot my MacBook Pro to change from the 9400 to the 9600.
Right.
Is there any word at all, anything new?
The only thing new that came out was the AppleInsider.com, who's kind of a frequenter of rumor sites, said they said specifically that, where's the quote here, that they had seen, or somebody in Apple told them that there are systems up and running with Optimus technology in their development right now.
It's meaningless. That's meaningless. Yeah. That could just be a R&D lab.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the real issue here is Optimus is obviously works, but it works right now in Windows 7. So it's to me, the question is, how long does it take for this development to be converted over to Mac OS 10? Right. Because that's obviously a very different beast than working with Windows 7 and how, you know, I don't know the intricacies of how drivers and this kind of stuff work in Mac OS as how I do in Windows 7 or Windows Vista and that kind of stuff. So there's probably a lot of software engineers hard at work, both NVIDIA and Apple's, getting this ready to go. I mean, it seems like a foregone conclusion at this point because of the relationship that NVIDIA and Apple have currently, like you said, with the 9400M integrated chipset, 9600 discretes, and all of the MacBook Pros that are available today. And I don't see that really changing any. And I still believe that Apple is waiting for this technology to release their chips, because I mean the Core i5 Arendelle processors have been available for a long time now. They're great performers, they're great for battery life. There's really no negatives to transitioning to this from the Core 2 platform at this point. But we knew ASUS was waiting for Optimus technology to be released before they really pushed out their Arendelle systems. And that's why after Optimus was announced, we saw, I think, 7 ASUS Core i5 or Core i3 based notebooks announced like that very week, all using Optimus technology. So I think that's pretty much all we're waiting for. But yeah, the only thing new was this Apple Insider rumor site basically saying that they are seeing it working inside Apple. But there you go.
Yeah, that's not...
Hopefully soon, I guess.
It doesn't mean outside Apple. But it does... I mean, it's completely logical.
Yes.
That they will do this. I mean, they're going to do Arendelle. In fact, that's why everybody's saying, what happened? You know, usually... and we talked about this, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Usually Apple gets dibs on the new Intel chips and releases it before anybody else. There are Arendelle PC laptops out there. So, come on. Yep. What's going on?
Yep.
I don't know. You know, Apple has, of course, many other issues besides which chip it's using, or, you know, whether it's using Optimus or not. But Probably.
Yeah, I mean, you got to wonder if maybe they're making it more than just a spec upgrade at this point.
Exactly.
You know, maybe they want to do something else, so they're just kind of holding on to that.
That's what I would guess. Also, remember, Apple is a very marketing-driven company, and so if how are they going to explain Optimus without implying that the way they did it before was not so hard?
I don't really know.
So well last time.
Apple's pretty good at just ignoring past transgressions, right? My guess is that they just wouldn't mention it. They just be like, look at our brand new laptops. They're so awesome.
Right.
And they wouldn't.
They're really not even going to say, now you don't have to reboot. They're not going to say that.
They didn't bring up Newton.
No.
When they talked about the iPad, right?
They're not going to say anything. They're not going to say, oh, now you can switch video cards without rebooting. They're not going to say that. They might say at somewhere in their copy, they'll say, switch seamlessly from high power to high energy consumption. You know, I mean, low energy consumption. They're going to say something like that.
Right. And to NVIDIA's benefit, I mean, they kind of know this is a technology that they've invented that works really well. It is completely behind the scenes. And if they've done it right, nobody will know that their system has it. Right. And that's for a company like NVIDIA, that much like Apple is a very marketing driven company.
Right.
That's probably something hard. That's hard to swallow. Right. The NVIDIA would love to have the NVIDIA logo pop up every time the GPU transitions to on. Be like, hey, now you're using the power of NVIDIA. But obviously, these OEMs don't want that. They don't want people to ruin the user experience. Right. So they've basically taken a back seat to all this other kind of stuff. And actually, interesting, the first thing happened with the first instance of one of the great features of Optimus occurred today, actually, where NVIDIA pushed out profile updates for Optimus seamlessly, you know, behind the scenes through their driver to any Optimus-enabled notebooks that are available today. So, like, if you had, they basically added profiles for StarCraft II, for example. So, if you have a notebook and Optimus technology wasn't working correctly before, all of a sudden it will start working, you know. And so, obviously, their goal is to get these profiles out before the games are out and that kind of stuff, and or update and correct and fix or improve and stuff like that. But we actually saw the first iteration of these. These seamless, I don't want to say seamless, but these behind-the-scenes updates happen to Optimus notebooks, so that's good as well. One less thing for the user to have to worry about.
It's very much like a lot of technology advances where we'll forget that we even had to reboot. It'll be like, you had to reboot? What?
Yeah.
Why would you have to reboot? What was that all about?
Well, and it's like, well, with the profiles, it's like, why would you have to install a new driver? Why couldn't they just update it? Why couldn't it just be fixed in the background, right? I mean, that's basically what the profile system prevents, is if a user wanted to play StarCraft II on their Optimus notebook without this automatic profile updating system, they'd have to go to NVIDIA's website, download a 90 to 100 meg installation file, install the driver, reboot their system, and then they could play the game. It would take advantage of all the features. But with this, they keep the core of the driver the same, and very rarely would you have to update those, but then the profiles for each individual application that you're running just kind of get updated on the fly.
Yeah.
So same idea, I think, is what you're just saying there. Yeah. Why would you ever have to do that?
Why would you have to do it? I mean, we still have to reboot, you know, Windows when we change network settings. Come on. What? You know.
Right.
It's like, why? Why would you have to do that?
Yeah.
Actually, Apple's one of the things that Apple sells is not having to reboot as much. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something you'd think they want to rush into.
Yeah.
Corsair. Agreed. Now this is a Corsair thumb drive, 8 gigabytes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
USB drive.
Yep.
Why? What in heaven's name is the big story here?
So this is just something I got in recently.
I use these. I love these Corsair drives. Oh, wait a minute. There's lights.
There's lights and there's numbers on it. And what you'll notice is that this is called the Padlock 2, and so it's actually. It has hardware AES 256-bit encryption built into the unit itself. So, like right now, if I plug this in, I can let's see if this will work live. Live is always great. So you can see that red flashing light right there.
Yeah.
Well, my computer did not recognize this drive as being plugged in. It doesn't even make a hardware connection to the computer because it's locked down. But if I hit the key there, you'll see it starts flashing. And I enter in my very complex passcode of 12345.
Oh, isn't that cool? Again. Okay, now I get it. That's neat.
Now the green light shows up and you can't see it, but it's installing the new device on my computer and I can access the files.
So how secure is it?
I mean, it's not going to be unbreakable, but I think but it's not software based. So, what you'll see is here is when I unplug it, the lights go out again, right? That detaches from my computer. When I plug it back in, the red light is automatically at work. So it actually doesn't make an electrical connection to the computer until you put in that passcode. So, other than
so that, oh, hardware hacking, interesting. Yes. Yeah, so you'd have to take it apart.
You'd have to take it apart and, you know, either, hack the AES chip on there or remove the NAND memory and put it on a different PCB. But it's all hardware encrypted on the memory. So you'd still have to, in theory, have all of the, the passcodes and the AES stuff working and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool. There's some neat features. This is actually their second iteration of this. This is the, it's 8 gig. So they've improved performance on it quite a bit. It's not going to be the fastest USB drive in the world because it is hardware encrypted. So it has to go through an extra step before you can read the data and that type of thing. But it's just one of those. It's just one of those little neat little things that it's just nice to have. If you have data that you don't want other people to see, you don't have to remember to do anything. If you take it out of your computer, you can leave it on your desk, and even if somebody takes it or it sticks it back in your own computer, they're not going to be able to read the data off of it. It has, obviously, you can set the key, the 4-to-10-digit passcode on your own. You can set, one of the new things they added was if like an IT department wanted to give these to all their employees, they can set a master key as well as give the ability for each person to set their own. If you forget the code, this is the only negative to it, right?
You're screwed.
If you forget the code, you're screwed. They give
really?
You
are you? You can't. Yeah. Can, you can't repro. You can't fix it.
you can. You can keep using it.
Oh,
but you don't get any of your data back. So the process
and the drive is suddenly gone to 8 megabytes from 8 gigabytes.
Well, no, I mean you can reset it, and it basically
you lose everything.
But then you can start using it again. So that's always the problem with things like this. Right. It's like putting a padlock on your locker at the gym and you forget the code for it. Yep. Like, all right, well, got to cut it and get a new one. So this one is 8 gigs. It sells for like $50, $55, something like that. So it's a little bit, it's more than a traditional 8 gig flash drive would cost you, obviously, because you are getting AES encryption chip on there as well as, all the lights and buttons and stuff associated with it. But I thought it was a pretty cool little nifty thing. It's available now. It's on their website. You can go to Newegg or wherever you need to go and pick it up. But, if you don't want your tax information to get out to the wrong people, Leo, or you don't want
perfect.
you can put all your tax info on this, and the IRS comes up and be like, "Oh man, I forgot all my passcodes." I'm sure they'll just believe you.
Sure,
but it does. It's neat.
That's a good idea. I like it.
One of those little things.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Gadgets.
Adobe has released another update to 10.1. This is the beta that does GPU acceleration. They're up to beta 3 now.
Correct.
And what's the difference?
And so actually, it doesn't just do GPU acceleration anymore. That's kind of the change and difference with this iteration of the beta. It adds support for Intel GMA 500 and the Broadcom Crystal HD chip.
Uh-huh.
So GMA 500 is the integrated graphics associated with the Intel Atom Z series processors. And what's interesting about it, and I actually just learned this today reading up a little bit more about the GMA 500, is not an Intel developed graphics chip. It is a PowerVR architecture that they licensed and put on the very fantastically named System Controller Hub US15W. So this was the chipset associated with the Atom.
Oh, the 16W, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
So if there are quite a few netbooks and laptops out there that use the Intel Z5 series, Z500 series processor. I think the Dell Mini 10 and Mini 12 are probably the most common ones that use this chip. So now, essentially, what happens is Beta 3 of Flash 10.1 supports flash acceleration on that GPU architecture. So now you can watch 720p, and I'm seeing reports of 1080p YouTube video on these systems using that graphics architecture. And then also Intel's Pine Trail, which is the latest generation of Atom that's come out, it does not support flash acceleration. But what Intel had done was partnered with Broadcom to kind of encourage people that are developing Atom-based netbooks to use this Broadcom Crystal HD chip. And the Crystal HD, this chip's sole purpose is video acceleration. And this Beta 3 adds flash video acceleration to that as well. So you can expect at least 720p video support, you know, seamless.
On a GMA 500? Wow.
On a GMA 500 or an Atom system that has the Broadcom Crystal HD system.
That's cool. That's amazing.
So yeah. So it's actually pretty good. So that's great for consumers. What it's, you know, now we can't really call it just GPU acceleration for flash video anymore, because it's adding support for these kind of external. I mean, the Crystal HD is its sole purpose is video acceleration. So now we're finally getting that support in there as well. So yeah, I'm looking some of the netbooks that use the GMA 500, the Acer Aspire 1750. There's a handful of EPCs, the tablet Dell Inspiron Mini 10 and 12, MSI Wind U115. A Nokia and NEC, a couple of Sony VAIO-P and Sony VAIO-X. Those all use that iteration of the Intel Atom processor that will now be able to take advantage of this beta. So there you go. Probably NVIDIA is not as excited about it because their Ion chipset.
Right. It undermines
their Ion 2 chipset.
Right. Right.
Isn't the only player in the game now. So
right.
That could be problematic for them. But you know, you can do more with a GPU from NVIDIA. You can do very moderate gaming. I say very, very moderate gaming on these systems when you have a discrete graphics solution from NVIDIA on it. And then you can do the GPU accelerated applications like your video transcoding and or anything like that. But obviously the main selling point is being able to watch Hulu 720p. Oh,
that's it. On a netbook.
And 1080p. Even though most of these screens on these notebooks aren't, well, actually, none of them are 1080p screens, right?
Right.
But you can watch 1080p video and scale it. So.
720p. Come on, let's not get crazy here. 1080p.
Yeah.
It's amazing that they think they can do that. So it also shows what a pig flash is, frankly.
Yes. You know, it's one of those. I can't believe I haven't done this yet. Was testing. It's hard to do. It's not an apples to apples comparison. But can you play like the NBC Olympics Silverlight coverage?
Supposedly, Silverlight's a lot better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Supposedly, yeah. It is, but I don't know of any source that sends out both in Flash and Silverlight where you can do a side-by-side comparison, this kind of stuff. I imagine that Flash probably doesn't want that to happen for multiple reasons, right? So,
you mean, I see what you're saying, because nobody does both.
Right, that's what I, yeah. If
you
know, I can get...
The content doesn't matter that much, does it?
Well, I mean... It depends on, you know, you don't know what parameters you're getting from Silverlight.
I guess you're right.
That kind of thing. I mean, you could do a comparison, but in order for it to be 100% valid, you'd have to have like the same stream. So if somebody bigger than me, like CNET, they could probably set up their own Silverlight streaming service and their own Flash streaming service and use that for their testing purposes for that. So,
yeah. Hey, we're going to come to some of your questions. Oh, actually, before we do that, mm-hmm. NVIDIA... What is this? Announces an announcement date?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of comments about this, so I felt like we needed to bring it
this
up.
This is an article on PC Perspective.
It's an article linking to an article at another website that links
Inquirer.
To
yeah.
a Facebook entry from NVIDIA that says, we are going to announce the GTX 480 and on March 26th.
Fermi.
Yes. These are the Fermi-based, these are the consumer-level discrete graphics cards. The problem was NVIDIA did a countdown to an announcement on their Facebook page.
We're going to make an announcement.
And the announcement that they counted down to was that we're going to announce the GTX 480 and 470 on March 26th. And it was kind of like really one of those kind of really annoying types of things.
Here's what they tweeted. Yeah. Apologies for the confusion around our most recent GF100 update. To clarify, launch date for GeForce GTX 480 and 470 is March 26, 2010.
Yeah, so their announcement about announcement wasn't even
misannounced.
Yeah, exactly. But the important information is that now we know the release date for the upcoming NVIDIA Fermi-based GeForce 100 graphics cards.
Neat.
March 26th at PAX East. So
well, that's the announcement.
The announcement is they're going to release the cards on the 26th of March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Launch date. Yes, I see what you're saying. Launch date. Of course. Okay.
Right. So that's pretty much it. So if you were... You know, NVIDIA is doing this on purpose. They want people to not purchase AMD's graphics cards.
So they pre-announce.
So they have, you know, in November, they released a little bit of information about the architecture. In January, they released a little bit more information about the architecture, some of the features. And now in February, they're releasing, well, we're just wait another month and we'll have new cards for you, because obviously every person, they may hold off on their purchasing decision until at least March 26th.
Right.
Has a better chance of buying an NVIDIA product. So that's obviously the goal here. And it's just
so
kind of
silly.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things. It's like, well, we kind of have to talk about it and tell people because they're interested.
We have some tweets for you, some questions for you to answer in just a moment. Before we do that, though, I would like to tell everybody in hearing and watching about audible.com. The great Audible is a place where you can get audio books, radio shows, magazines, newspapers, audio content of all kinds. Now, if you're listening to a podcast or watching This Week in Computer Hardware, we know you like to listen. Wouldn't you like to listen to a great book or novel, learn something from some nonfiction and history or business books, be thrilled by a Stephen King novel or a great science fiction book? This is the place, audible.com. Now, if you want to go get one free to try it out, I do encourage you to do that. With all of our advertisers, we always try to get a freebie because we know that you want to try before you buy. And so what you can get is one book free by going to audiblepodcast.com/twitch, audiblepodcast.com/twitch. You'll sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month. It's a very affordable subscription, but your first one's free, and you can cancel any time. I'm listening to a physics book right now that I love called The Black Hole War, My Battle to Make the World Safe for Quantum Mechanics. Leonard Susskind is a very famous physicist who had a very famous feud with Stephen Hawking over the nature of black holes. This book tells that story, but in the process, you learn about black holes, about the theory behind them. I think there's something fascinating about these things, and this is the guy who knows more about it than anybody, and it's a wonderful book. I've really been enjoying it. What happens, the question is, when information is sucked into a black hole? Stephen Hawking said it disappears forever, which violates a fundamental tenet of physics, the law of the conservation of information. Leonard Susskind and his colleagues said, that can't be. Stephen, it can't be. You're changing all of physics on us here. So the story of the Black Hole Wars is how Susskind and Gerard Tuft united to reconcile Hawking's theories with their own sense of reality in an effort that would eventually result in Hawking admitting he was wrong. Oh, I hope I haven't spoiled this show for you. It's a great book. I love it. Do you love physics? Do you love science? This is just one of many books.
That sounds like an intense read.
You know what? It's much. It does, but it's not. He's really good. You know, as often is the case, sometimes these guys who really understand this stuff are better at explaining it than the rest of us because they understand it so deeply that they can explain it. Anyway, this is just one of many, many books. Go to science fiction if the black holes are your thing, but you don't want to hear the science of it. Science fiction of it is great too. There's lots of great science fiction here, fantasy. I love Audible. I read stuff like this all the freaking time. At the gym, in the car. I sometimes just go for a ride so I can listen to my Audible book. Go to audible.com. I'm sorry, Audible, audiblepodcast.com podcast.com/twitch. Get your first one free. Audible. A whole world of listening awaits you on your iPod, iPhone, Zune, almost any device. Audible.com. Audiblepodcast.com/twitch. All right, Ryan, let's get some, you ready for some Q&A?
You want some? I will do the best I can.
Well, you wrote them down, so I hope you have the answers to them.
Either I have the answers or it's a really good question.
This one comes from Kevin. He tweets, this week some Ion 2 benchmarks came out and showed Ion 2 not to perform as well as Ion 1. Well, that's got to be wrong. Is this because of Pine Trail or Ion 2? Any way to tell which of these is the issue? What is going on here?
So I looked through these articles that he pointed us to. There are a couple of different sources for it. And my understanding of these technologies is that it doesn't seem possible for me that it wouldn't perform at least as good as the first generation of Ion. My understanding is that Ion 2 will not be very different than Ion 1. We've talked about this before. Ion 2 is a discrete graphics chip, whereas Ion, the first generation, is a chipset. So it has a memory controller, it has storage controllers, and it has integrated graphics.
That's faster, isn't it? Because it's all in one die.
Well, in theory, but it's still communicating with the processor. And then for its local frame buffer, it would actually be using system memory as well, as opposed to a discrete GPU like Ion 2 or next generation Ion or whatever they're calling it, has its own separate memory. So it'll have 256 or 512 megs of frame buffer dedicated to it. So my thought would be that it would be a little bit faster than the first generation Ion if there would be any difference, right? This is all assuming that the specifications for shader processors and that kind of stuff are all going to be the same, which is a pretty good assumption at this point, if only because when we're talking about where Ion is going to go, we're talking about netbooks and nettops, and these are the kinds of systems that you don't have a lot of flexibility in terms of your thermal envelope. How powerful a chip can you make fit into a tiny netbook or a nettop PC the size of a CD, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't expect there to be a performance boost. I don't think there would be a performance drop. The numbers that he's pointing us to, they even got a quote from NVIDIA that says, look, these tests were run on like a show floor. No telling how identical the systems were or what driver revisions they were using and all this other kind of stuff. So there's a lot of questions involved in the benchmarks. The benchmarks actually haven't been officially released by NVIDIA or any kind of like major review site or anything like that. But I will say that I wouldn't expect Ion 2 to be a better performer than Ion 1. Ion 2 was basically created in order for NVIDIA to still have a presence in that market, because with the switch to Pine Trail and removal of the front side bus and all these legality issues, NVIDIA couldn't make a chipset anymore. They couldn't use their chipset, so they had to just make a discrete GPU that would kind of support the same function. But the benefit of Ion 2 is that you get Optimus technology with it as well. So you get Optimus with your netbook just as well as you can get Optimus with your high-end desktop replacement laptop as well. So,
question two from Alexandre Card. We don't know where the word break is in that.
Agreed.
Alexander Iecard.
I think it's Alexander Lecard.
Oh, it's an L. Alexander Lecard.
I think.
Ryan Schrout, do you still consider the 5870 the fastest video card? How much difference with the 5770?
I still consider the 5870 to be the fastest single GPU graphics card you can buy. The NVIDIA GTX 295 is a dual GPU graphics card, and the Radeon 5970 is a dual GPU graphics card. So those are both going to outperform the 5870, but you have the complications of Crossfire and all this other kind of stuff. So if it sounds to me like he maybe knows he wants to keep it with a single graphics card or single GPU graphics card, or he has, both of those cards are going to be quite a bit more than the 5870. So the 5870 is still my pick for best single GPU card, if you can put that in your budget. And how much difference is there between it and the 5770? And the answer is quite a bit. The 5770 has half the shader count of the 5870. And I just real quickly, while we were in their intermission here, I looked up performance results, just picking one at random. Far Cry 2 at 1912 by 1200, which is kind of a good standard resolution. The 5870 scored 83 frames a second, whereas the lesser card scored 48 frames per second. So not quite half the performance, a little bit higher than half the performance with the 5770, but a noticeable improvement. So, I mean, you're going from a minimum of 15 frames with an average of 48 frames to a minimum of 30 with an average of 83. And that's Far Cry 2 with kind of, you know, the top image quality settings and all that kind of stuff. So you can get a higher frame rate with lower end cards if you lower your IQ settings, your memory, not your IQ settings, but your image quality settings. I won't confuse anybody there. But 5870 is going to be a drastically superior card in terms of gaming performance.
Okay. Question 3 from Bruce Wilkie Jr. I think I got that one right. Question for today's show.
That's good.
Yeah. Advice on a RAID configuration. What's best for performance? What controller do you recommend?
He didn't mention hard drives or solid state drives.
Right.
For the most part, Alan would be mad at me if I didn't say that for SSDs, still today, RAID is probably not recommended because you lose the benefits of trim support. Currently, none of the mainstream RAID controllers will support passing on trim to the operating system from each individual SSD. So if we stick with hard drives, in terms of configuration, if you're looking for best performance, you're going to look at RAID 0. Obviously, that's the kind of two hard drives. If you get 2 1-terabyte hard drives, you've got 1 terabyte of storage performance. So you lose capacity at the benefit of performance. You also lose a little bit. You don't have any data redundancy. If one hard drive dies, you lose all the data on both drives. As far as what controller to use, I think the Intel integrated chipset, the ICH10, as is the most recent version that you'll find on P55 motherboards or X58 motherboards and that type of thing. I don't know what system he's basing on. Are actually really, really good RAID controllers. They do a pretty good job. You can always get, you know, a discrete, so to speak, RAID card for our video editing machine. We're using an Eureka card that's probably a $300 RAID card that has 256 megs of onboard memory for it. And it's obviously it's much faster than something you'll get on board, but obviously at a much, much, much higher cost, probably more expensive than the motherboard you're paying for. So I think standard hard drives, if you're worried about performance, RAID 0. If you can afford to go to 4 hard drives, you can do RAID 0 plus 1. So you get redundancy and speed performance. Or speed improvements, and then I think the integrated RAID on chipsets these days has actually improved quite a bit.
It used to be just kind of really basically software.
It still at its core is software RAID. That's why when you start doing things like RAID 5 on an integrated controller, it you don't see the speed improvements that you might with the discrete with an external RAID controller. Because all that processing has to be done on the chipset or the CPU. But for RAID 0 and RAID 1, they're simple enough that modern hardware can handle it pretty well.
Modern hardware. Zen Productions with our final question of the day. My monitor, a Samsung P2570HD, blurs all the text and displays colors incorrectly in HDMI mode. But just fine on the DVI. What's going on?
I would be curious to know if the sources are the same. Assuming that they are, like if he's got the same graphics card, is he using a DVI to HDMI converter, like a little DVI to HDMI adapter, and that's how he's seeing the HDMI connection, then I would check. Maybe if you have a friend with another one of those adapters or an extra adapter you can switch between and see if that might be the issue. Also, depending on the resolution of the monitor, HDMI only supports up to 1080p resolutions. It might do 1920 by 1200 as well, but I'm not positive on that. So if the resolution of your screen is somewhere different than that, you might want to check that when you connect the HDMI cable that you can go into Windows, you know, your display properties and change the resolution around and see if you change it to 1920 by 1080p, if that fixes your text blurring and color issues. I had that issue. I kind of have a similar issue with a totally different monitor but with DisplayPort. And sometimes when it wakes up from being asleep, it will have all kinds of distorted things on it. But if I change the resolution down and back up, it tends to fix the problem. So I don't have any experience with that exact monitor, but those are a couple of things that I would suggest trying at least.
Very good.
Yep.
We have come to the end of a thrilling, gripping edition of PC Perspective. I'm sorry, Twitch. PC's Perspectives later this evening at 7 o'clock Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv. That's when you and Colleen and the gang and Alan will all discuss these same issues in great detail. This is kind of like you watch both shows. You watch this show to find out what the story is, find out what the story means on PC Perspective. Thank you so much, sir.
Hey, thank you very much.
All right, we'll see you next time with Ryan Shrout. Go to PCPER.com, by the way, for more information. Ryan's email address is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Computer Hardware.